congestion pricing, and state use taxes. We get AOPA's take on both. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Andy Cibula, who is the Executive Vice President for Government Affairs with Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. We're here to get AOPA's take on a couple of issues that have been in the news in the past couple of weeks. Andy, first of all, welcome in and thanks for taking a few minutes for our listeners today.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity.
Let me start right out by asking you about the notice of proposed rulemaking that came out of the Department of Transportation on Monday, January 14th. Mary Peters and Bobby Sturgill apparently did not want to let the congestion pricing thing lie after the meeting with the industry reps that they convened. I guess it kind of caught some people in the industry by surprise. I looked at the notice of proposed rulemaking. I didn't see really anything that looked like a major change in policy, but AOPA came out with a statement saying that this was a potential issue for GA, and Phil Boyer was quoted in the statement by AOPA as saying that AOPA would be watching very carefully to make sure that general aviation was not discriminated against. I didn't see in the DOT stuff what Phil was talking about. Could you spell out for us what the threat to GA is in this NPRM?
It was a very interesting way that the DOT approached it, because they made some very strong statements publicly, and the preamble to the document talks about some concepts and principles, and then they have what is at least more benign sounding, but I think, and we think as an organization, can be very insidious language. And what they're attempting to do, what the Department of Transportation is attempting to do, is to have airports embrace a policy that is using pricing, and it could be excessive pricing, to force lighter or smaller aircraft from using an airport during peak times. An airport would have to be determined to be congested to fall under this, but the very notion that they want to try to restrict access is something, quite frankly, that we just can't stand for. So we are very concerned about the principle behind what Secretary Peters has said. Bobby Sturgill, as the acting administrator, has made some statements about this. And it's frankly just bad public policy, and it's not going to be good for general aviation, because once something like this gets established in principle, the fear is that you take an area like, you know, use a New York area, it starts to spread to Teterboro, and then it'll start to spread to other airports in the area, and pretty soon it'll have an adverse effect on many general aviation pilots.
All right. Well, I understand completely what you're saying. I have to ask, though, I guess, just from a mathematics point of view, is that if you have a limited resource, I mean, the airline industry is constantly hammering on the FAA and the DOT that you're not approaching this the right way. The way to do this is to increase capacity. And that's okay, but the FAA has scheduled next gen to be rolled in at a snail's pace, but even if it was rolled in as quickly as it could be, it's some number of years down the road. If you have a congestion problem now and you can't create more slots, I mean, whether you want to define them as slots or not, there's still just physically a certain number of aircraft you can get into a space at a time. What is the answer then if more planes want to land than can be accommodated by an airport and an air traffic control situation in a given area?
Yeah, and that really is at the heart of a lot of what the discussion is, and it really doesn't directly relate to general aviation, and that is that the airlines want to fly too many airplanes into an airport at any given time, and they typically want to overschedule the capacity for an airport, and that's really what the primary issue is, which is a problem that they've got to figure out how they want to resolve it. What we're really saying is that we shouldn't, in general aviation, be prohibited from flying into an airport. Kennedy Airport, as an example, is a facility that right now there's another proposed rulemaking out that alludes to some suggested either limitations on unscheduled flying or an outright ban on unscheduled operations during certain times of day. Again, not many AOPA members, not many people in the general aviation community want to fly into Kennedy, but the fact is that the notion or that principle, that concept of saying, hey, there are going to be certain times of the day when we're just simply not going to allow general aviation access. That's just, again, for us, seeing that it's an air transportation system that is supposed to be accessible to all and not just large airline aircraft, that's just a notion that we just can't stand for.
Pilots who fly into Kennedy, LaGuardia already pay landing fees that differ based on the time of day they arrive.
Correct.
What does AOPA see that is an escalation from that?
The escalation would be that those, theoretically at least, and under current FAA policy, those charges have to be related to cost, okay? Mm-hmm. And what the Department of Transportation wants to move to is let's not focus on the cost to provide the access. Let's use pricing policy to restrict or control the demand. And that's the difference. One is based on an increased cost to provide access during a particular time of day versus using pricing policy to restrict access. And that's the difference in the, I mean, it's a fine line, but boy, once you cross it, it's a dangerous line to cross.
Okay, this is still going to, I think, remain somewhat of a gray area in my understanding, because I think that no matter whether it's strictly an economic issue that we're studying or something that we don't normally consider part of economics, like supply and demand of time, we're still going to end up in some way being governed by supply, demand, price. So I guess we'll just have to see how this plays out and where it goes. But I do appreciate your clarifying that, because I really didn't understand what Phil was getting at when that statement was first issued. We want to take a break here, but when we come back, let's talk about the use taxes that are popping up. And I want to talk specifically, if you got a minute, about the state of Maine and what's going on there, because I know AOPA is involved.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
All right. We're talking with Andy Cibula today, who is the Executive Vice President for Government Affairs of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. We'll be back with more in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Andy Cibula, Executive VP for Government Affairs with AOPA. Andy, I was shocked to read, in an era, I guess, when no government excess should be shocking to us anymore, I read these stories of these poor guys who had aircraft, were registered, purchased, where they lived and worked in Massachusetts, found themselves, because they had a summer home in Maine and did some angel fly work, suddenly facing a $26,000 tax bill from the state of Maine, and apparently not a whole lot they can do about it. Tell us how this got started and how it has even withstood a year of scrutiny.
Yeah, well, the state of Maine implemented this law to try and address some revenue shortfalls, and it's really not that uncommon that states have sales tax on the sale of an aircraft. That's like they do for cars and other things. That it's not that uncommon. In the state of Maine, though, they set it up in a very peculiar way, because if you're not a resident of the state of Maine and you fly into the state and you hit a cumulative clock, if you will, of 20 days, and the state where you bought the aircraft didn't have a sales tax, the state of Maine now is saying you owe them sales tax in the first year of ownership. So it's a fairly, as you can hear me explain it, it's a fairly complicated provision. And certainly for a person that is flying into a state like Maine, where, you know, people want to fly, they like to go there in particular for tourism, it's really discouraging people from wanting to fly there. And I think that there have been some stories in your publication, as well in some of the papers in the state of Maine, about this really discouraging kind of tax that they've imposed.
Well, it looks kind of underhanded, and it looks very much calculated to sock it to the little guy, because in the case of Maine, aircraft over 6,000 pounds are exempted. And what that says to me is, we don't want to get anybody annoyed who might have his own attorney on retainer.
Yeah, that's certainly one way to look at it. Well, I can tell you that we have been involved in this, and as a matter of fact, we had some of our people in the state of Maine last week. This week, we've been talking to the governor's office, doing some follow-up work, as well as the revenue authority, and we're trying to deal with two things here. For the future, we want to get the law changed, so we've initiated talks with the state legislature to try to make that happen. And for those people that are already affected, well, it's a little bit of a delicate process, because you're dealing with a lot of individual tax situations. We're working to try to get either the interpretation of this 20 days changed or the application of the tax change, so that people aren't facing these huge tax bills. I mean, I think you used the example of someone that was flying Angel flights,
right,
to the state of Maine. I mean, you want to discourage that kind of flying? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, and the other aspect of it too is that I think Florida was in the lead on this facet of it, is the idea of using FAA records available online and flight plans to determine targets for this tax. So now what you're saying is that, you know, I might be facing a $26,000 bill out of nowhere, but if I choose not to file an IFR flight plan, my chances of incurring this tax go way, way down. So now suddenly you're discouraging me from flying safely in some cases.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, it almost sounds like user fees, doesn't it? I mean, it's exactly some of the arguments that we've been making about how tax policy, or in the case of, you know, some of the discussion at the federal level on user fees, how it really is an anti-safety type of initiative. And, you know, I think you and I were talking before the broadcast here. It's really not that uncommon that states have taxes on a sale of an aircraft, and we can argue the merits of whether that's, you know, that should be or not. But the fact is that most states are far more reasonable in saying that if you haven't had the aircraft in the state for more than 90 days, then the tax doesn't apply to you. I mean, there's normally some threshold that's a far higher threshold of use than what the state of Maine has implemented.
Well, and if it's legitimately structured so that it's going after people who are tax scofflaws, in other words, residents of Maine who, you know, go to Massachusetts to buy their plane to dodge the tax, that's one thing. But, you know, to me, I can't figure out why in the world there hasn't been a challenge based on interference with interstate commerce or one of the other criteria that might be available for federal preemption on this, because, I mean, you talk about a crazy quilt patchwork tax system facing people just trying to go about their daily lives. This could be a big one.
Yeah, it is. It's very frustrating. I think that you're going to see more action on this I would say just stay tuned over the next couple of weeks.
Thank you for taking a few minutes out, and we will watch with great interest the releases from AOPA, and we'll call on you again when things heat up in any corner of this.
Well, great. Well, we look forward to talking to you in the future.
My guest has been Andy Cibula, who is the Executive Vice President for Government Affairs with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. You can find out more at aopa.org. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.